Clubhouse.
Welcome back to A Galaxy Far, Far Away for the How Uncivilized podcast covering the new Obi-Wan Kenobi series from Disney Plus. As usual, this is Paul, and I'm here with my friend Mark.
What up?
This one is called Part 2.
So, Part 2, if you will.
Yeah, usually we try to examine the titles for things to see if there's any underlying meaning, but I think we're just supposed to mean this is the second one. All right, this one picks up with Dayu.
Is it the planet? Tokyo meets New York City meets Blade Runner.
I heard Hong Kong might have been in there too. I also got a very Blade Runner vibe. You know, talking about first impressions for the show and this episode in particular, for the most part, like 95%, I really like the sets. The set extensions, the creature work, the makeup, the costumes, all of that I buy. The armor looks like armor instead of dentable plastic. Yeah, everything pretty much looks right. There were a couple of shots in the first episode that I didn't quite like. They weren't enough to call the show shit or anything like that. It was just like, say when the Kylo Ren ship lands, right? Nothing moves like that and has ever moved like that in Star Wars. You know, it had a very artificial feeling in like the composition, like putting the 3D wind with the filmed material. It just didn't match for me, but the rest of it was fine. And so picking up with episode two in this new kind of environment, I saw this and I thought, this looks like Corellia. And then they said the name of the place, Dayu. And I'm like, well, this is apparently a shittier Corellia.
Yeah, good call. Like back in what we saw with Solo, right?
Yeah, yeah. A place that's got shipyards or manufacturing centers. And so the people that support that, and then the people that support the vices of the people that support that. But this looked like to be more vices, less manufacturing.
Yeah, I agree. It just looked incredible. I mean, all the different, there were tons of aliens walking around. Of course, we had the old clone trooper.
Spare any credits. Help a veteran get a warm meal.
How cool was that? We had a Boba Fett sitting there and you're like, oh yeah, they had the accelerated aging. And he's like, you know, spare some change for a veteran, you know, and that was cool. I think they're going to keep on popping that guy into every single Star Wars show they make. And I was wondering, it's like, oh, does he know Obi-Wan? Does he recognize him?
That particular trooper had seen better days a very long time ago. One part of the story of Star Wars that is just, you know, it's a footnote at this point because there's really nothing that's been explained about it. The whole phasing out of clone troopers and the conscription and other means of acquiring troops when they became the Galactic Army and the stormtroopers that we see in A New Hope, that transitioned to me for some reason. I am very interested in knowing, you know, where those guys went, how it worked out. Did the accelerating aging just kill them before they were 50 or how did that whole thing go? I'm pretty sure the Empire just like flushed them down the galactic toilet, but I still want to know.
Yeah, I don't really know. Was there a stated reason for that? Do we know? I think I've heard that Palpatine just wanted the biggest possible army. So he started conscripting, you know, more soldiers to grow the army. And like you said, I think the age acceleration kind of aged them out. I don't know if it was massive layoffs with the great recession of, you know, whatever year it is. But yeah, I think he just wanted a huge army to take control.
It's been retconned that the bearded soldier assisting Han Solo take the shield generator on Endor is Rex. I think if you look that up, you'll find that that has been supported recently. He doesn't, of course, get any lines in Return of the Jedi because they shot that before they knew who Rex was. But yeah, I think that's the thing. So that plays into that aging thing. That guy looked maybe in his 50s, maybe 60 even, in that scene where you can most clearly see him. And so that would be what, 25-ish years, 24, 25 years after Revenge of the Sith, so when the Clone War was over. And I think within canon, the cloning laboratories on Kamino were taken over and shut down pretty soon after that.
You know, that's so cool about the prequel story. I mean, you got to give it up to the world building, despite the questionable dialogue at times and all that. But just the fact that, I mean, they were having debates, Senator Organa and Padme, you know, kind of resisting this idea of creating a grand army of the Republic. And then at the same time, we have this droid army ramping up. On the other side, of course, we learn the greatest villain of all time. Some people say it's Darth Vader. I'd have to say it's Palpatine. It took six films, I guess you could say seven if you count The Rise of Skywalker, but to fully appreciate his treachery. It's like how many, it's like so many films to that he was there doing his thing, build, you know, getting these pieces into place, and took a galaxy that pretty much was pretty peaceful and didn't even really have standing armies to a creation of a war of two big armies and then making them go to war with each other and engineering all that. And then now we see a world where there's all this militarism and authoritarianism everywhere that he did by design in the name of it. And I like how he's, you know, all this evil spewing out. He's like, and then we shall have peace.
Once more, the Sith will rule the galaxy. And we shall have peace.
That's the thing with that kind of authoritarianism, that some of them can fool themselves into thinking that once they have enough control, and there will be peace. But I think Palpatine has proven that he's kind of disingenuous on that. He just really likes the power.
Yeah, I guess the bad guy doesn't ever think they're the bad guy.
True enough. All right, so like the first episode, I think I like this episode a little better. There's something about kids that instantly takes what could be awesome and tempers it somehow. Where unless they bring whatever that kid's doing up to the level of the adults, then it's like playing tag. And so they had a little bit of that in the last episode where like they're chasing her through the forest and they're clearly just like taking baby steps behind her because their legs are much longer than hers, but the chase would be over in two steps if they ran. So, you know, they've got to just toddle along behind her. That's so far my only gripe with the presence of a kid in the show. How do you feel about making this show about saving Leia?
I think it really worked. Like you said, the contrast of depressed Obi-Wan and the really, really confident Leia and sassy, that worked really well. I mean, you know, I loved her line. She's like, make me float. You're supposed to be a Jedi. You know, I want to float. That was great. And I mean, you know, it was just good to see Ben being like Detective Ben again. Like he was in episode two with that guy Dex, you know, and he's got the mystery of the poison dart, and he's in this case he's out there looking for her, and then he, you know, he finds her, and I thought their interaction. I mean, at times it kind of felt like a buddy film.
At times, yeah.
Between the two of them, but I thought it worked pretty well.
In this episode, we got a new character, and I wonder if he'll be back. His name is Haja Estri, played by comedic actor Kumail Nanjiani. Most well-known probably for Silicon Valley on HBO, but he was recently in The Eternals, and which he bulked up for. He was in the movie called The Big Sick that was about, it was like semi-autobiographical. You ever see that movie?
I did not, but I was a Silicon Valley fan, and I gotta be honest, whenever that scene came up and there he was, and you know, and he was doing his comedic shtick, I mean, he's a well-known comedian, and to me it kind of pulled me out of the whole thing. I'm like, oh,
okay,
boy,
that's fair.
I felt like it was a little over the top, a little cheesy. I mean, you could see him in the writer's room going, oh, how funny would it be to have this fake Jedi? And it was I think it was one of those things that in concept is really funny and pretty cool, but then the execution of it, I wasn't the biggest fan.
Humor in Star Wars is always tough. It's always been tough. And Kumail has one kind of delivery. He's not really an actor. He's a comedian who can remember his lines. Anywhere you see him, he has that same affect, that same delivery that he had in Silicon Valley, you know? It's funny the way he says things is funny, and his timing and all that. I don't think he can turn that off, apparently.
Yeah, no, I do think he's funny. It's just kind of like the Flea thing. You're going, oh, it's Silicon Valley. And you're like, oh, okay, now I'm not there anymore. But, you know, once you get okay with it, and, you know, he's in the story later on and he kind of redeems himself. That worked a little better for me. But, I mean, it definitely was funny, just the whole con man angle.
And interesting that it was not completely shitty either. It was not altruistic, but in the end, he was helping people that needed help. It's just sort of under a false pretense. Not sort of. It was exactly a false pretense.
Yeah, he likes credits. You can buy so many different things with them.
Do I like credits? Yeah. So much stuff you can buy with credits.
Oh, like I said, Star Wars humor is tough. The Last Jedi put some in there, and that film has a very mixed reception in the Star Wars fandom. Some of the best lines I've enjoyed weren't really meant to be funny, like when Han Solo is leaving Echo Base, or trying to leave Echo Base, and General Wrecken is like, well, a Death Mark's not an easy thing to live with. That's not played for laughs, but if you think about it, that's a pretty goddamn funny line, right? A death mark's not an easy thing to live with. No, it's not. That's why it's a death mark, right? Or Obi-Wan Kenobi on Kamino when they're asking him, do you want to go see the clones? And he's like, well, that's why I'm here.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, yeah.
But you must be anxious to inspect the units for yourself.
That's why I'm here.
You know, that's not meant to be funny exactly, but every time I see it, I do laugh because his delivery and his timing and all that is funny, but it's never meant to have that comedic actor's bent to it like Kumail can't not do.
Yeah, another piece of humor calling back to Han Solo that the show made me think, this episode made me think of, was when Leia was sitting there reading Obi-Wan's mind, you know, because like you said, her force power, she's has hyper intuition. And she's kind of picking apart his intentions because she's trying to understand, you know, is he on my side or is he not on my side? And she ends up, of course, running away. But it just made me think of Han Solo, you know, getting his mind read all the time by Leia. I was like, oh, man, he never had a shot. And then if you think, you know, right?
Oh, man, that's a whole new outlook on why that guy couldn't win an argument, right?
Yeah, that kind of paints a different picture of their relationship. And, of course, in the sequel trilogy, you know, we have the whole dialogue between he and Finn where Han Solo's like, okay, Finn, you got bigger problems, you know, because they know, they always know, you know? And so now I was thinking that, I was like, oh, I see what he meant. He's like, yeah, he had a problem with that. Finn's got this big problem because he's trying to pretend like he's this spy, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's take a look at this episode's big events, because there are a couple minor characters, but nobody really important, or at least not yet, crops up. Big events as I see them are Ben finds Leia. They make a run for it. Reva finds them. And then they get away. So those are the big events. So let's break down what was cool and noteworthy within those scenes. Let's start with breaking out Leia. Did you get any kind of A New Hope vibe from Ben breaking Leia out of the cell?
You know, I didn't think that, but now that you say that, yeah, absolutely.
If you think about it, listeners, they broke her out of a cell. She immediately runs in to someone that's not a walking carpet, but is a very tall, shaggy being.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then the next step is her rescuer attempts to tell her what to do, but that doesn't really work. Remember, Han tries to say,
look, your worshipfulness, let's get one thing straight. I take orders from just one person, me.
So one day still alive.
And that's the same kind of thing happening here. She's just much younger and doesn't quite have the experience to know what to say just yet. But you can see where it's kind of like building in her, starting with these kind of events in her life.
Well, how about that little actress, Simon? And she did a great job. And it was just, and the writing, the whole thing with her treatment was just really good. It was just fun, the interaction and how she just kept on being sassy. Just when you thought she was going to stop, she would double down, you know?
Right. Like, this isn't really the time and place to talk about the fact that I can float things. So maybe let's not talk about floating things.
Oh, you know, one thing, calling back to episode 4, I heard some other people pointing out, she does the whole, you know, the most famous line, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope. you know, you knew my father during the Clone Wars. And people were saying, well, she already knows Obi-Wan now. But when I watched it the second time, I was like, wait a second. Did he ever tell her his name? And there's a point where she says, you haven't even told me your name. And he says, it's Ben. So he doesn't, I don't think. And then she sees a picture of him on the hologram or whatnot.
Yeah, the bounty hunter.
Yeah, all the baddies are looking for him.
Yeah.
And that's why she thinks, oh, they were, you know, you were setting me up, because she's so smart. She figured that out. But yeah. And so people were saying, does that screw up episode 4? So I don't know. I think that maybe she knew him as Ben. And so it'll be interesting to see if she doesn't connect that dot and she thinks he's some other Jedi that's not Obi-Wan.
We'll have to keep an eye on that if he ever says his actual name or mention the name Kenobi. Her name in real life is Vivian Lyra Blair. She, for as young as she is, she has been in a lot of things, including the Waco television series. It was a miniseries. And she was a character in Bird Box, the Netflix sensation from a couple years ago. And also was in a movie called We Can Be Heroes, which was a Netflix movie directed and written by Robert Rodriguez, whose name we know from Star Wars, that also starred as one of the adults, Pedro Pascal.
Interesting. How old is she in real life? Because my six-year-old daughter was saying, I'm taller than she is, but she looks younger.
Her IMDb bio does not list an age. She's been acting since 2017, so for 5 years.
Well, that's some good casting right there, and it worked well.
For sure.
Okay, so yeah, one of the next things that happens is Reva has engineered this plot to capture Kenobi, and she did not inform the Grand Inquisitor, and he was not very happy with it. Again, I love this guy's acting and his intensity and his arrogance. And it's also funny how he just scolded her for what she's done, then says, okay, now I'm going to take credit for it, and you just go away.
In that scene, for the pedantic nerds out there, fifth brother was there, but who was the other sister? Was that possibly second sister from Fallen Order fame, or was that another unnamed sister?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know there was like a ninth or tenth sister in Fallen Order that was like the big alien.
Yeah, she was more gorilla-sized.
I had no idea who that other one was, and they didn't really feature her very much, but I assume we'll get more of her in the coming episodes.
The IMDb and even internet at large listings for the identification of what roles the actors are playing is like, it's frustrating because they don't list them all. So yeah, that scene where Grand Inquisitor and the whole schmear with Inquisitors showing up on Dayu trying to rein in Reva. I don't know. I think she was kind of unreinable before they got there. Like, she was going to go through with this no matter who showed up. Maybe if Vader showed up, that would have been a totally different ball of wax. But this bunch, she wasn't so worried about.
Yeah, she was going to do her thing. It was a smart plan. It worked. And it was great how he was going to take advantage of it. So now we have this big chase scene that we enter into, and she's kind of doing the Batman thing, hanging up on the rooftop, like waiting for something to happen. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was cool, but then it worked out to be, because of the length of the chase, bordering on too much, like parkouring, like for 15 minutes across.
I was going to say, I noticed that too, because, you know, the whole scene where Leia was falling, and we'll get to that, and the gunfight that was happening between the Velociraptor guy, who's like a meme waiting to happen, you know, and I'm like, okay, she's seeing the gunfight. Surely she'll be there. And then she's, like you said, parkour for like 10 minutes. And I'm like, man, she must have taken the long way.
We'll handle this.
We'll take the long way.
Right. Well, you know, when you're parkouring over buildings, what looks like only a couple buildings away on TV, I guess it's really far, because she was doing that a really long time.
You got to force push towers into bridges and things like that.
It's a whole new kind of extreme sport. Did the cause of the chase, did that register with you? Were you like, well, that's a good reason for this child to run away? Or was it like, come on, kid. He broke you out of jail. Like, you're jumping to conclusions here.
Yeah, I thought it worked because she saw the picture and she's like, wait a second, you're the target here. And it was kind of a setup. And so I thought it was viable. I believed it. And it was a little ridiculous, but it's true to her character, I guess. But yeah, I agree with you. The chase kind of went on a little too long, but of course it culminates in her falling. And that was pretty tense.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you. Question. Did you catch the fact that Obi-Wan hadn't used the Force the whole time? I didn't really catch that. And then when that happened, I was like, oh, I guess he hadn't been using the Force.
I think that's true. I think that's true. He may have even closed himself off to the Force as to not draw attention to himself. As mentioned in the Fallen Order game, the mentor figure for your character, Cal, she is a Jedi who did that. She cut herself off from the Force and made it so that she couldn't use the Force, but also she couldn't like be cerebroed by other Force users. So I think that's true. I think that's exactly true. That's the reason that it taxed him so much. I was trying to actually remember, was he a great telekinetic user previous? And I think he was pretty good. If you look at what he was able to do in the prequel series and the Clone Wars cartoons or animated series, he was not weak in telekinesis. Do you recall?
Well, these aren't the droids you're looking for. No, he was considered to be, yeah, one of the most powerful ones. So I think you're right. I think he was so shell-shocked by the trauma of what happened with the Purge that he just shut her down. She closed down shop. So I thought that worked really well when, you know, we have Leia falling to her death and it's do or die. And that's the moment that he kicked it in and it worked out. I thought that was awesome.
Didn't get that Gwen Stacy moment where she doesn't make it. No, she does make it because we need her to make it because the whole galaxy needs her later on. All right. So the big moment in the cargo facility where there's the come to Jesus moment between Reva and the Grand Inquisitor. Did you see that coming?
Oh, I did not see that coming. I think we talked about it. We kind of know what's going on with Rebels in the future. So there's a sense of timeline. And I guess they were channeling their inner George Martin over here and just decided to go ahead and just
kill them. Just, kill them all.
Man, I know. I was shocked. I was like, wait, what? And so I am confused. You know, it was Simpsons level, you know, what?
I did a little tiny amount of research before this podcast, and similar to how we got in Rogue One when they're looking for the plans for the Death Star in the data center, and they run across something that's about how to track ships in hyperspace. But they just put it on screen for a second, but they don't pay it any mind because they're looking for Death Star plans, not, you know, other things. And then the next movie they put out is The Last Jedi, which what do? They track ships in hyperspace. And so it's just a tiny Easter egg that's there to establish enough pattern that, you know, the Empire was working on this a long time ago. So, yeah, it's something that the First Order can do many years later. So I wonder if we're getting that same kind of feel here.
Yeah. I'm blanking on her name. Who is Boba Fett's sidekick? Is it Fennin?
Fennec.
Yeah, thank you. So Fennec, you know, we had her get the mods, right? She was taken in.
She got blown apart. Yeah. And then Boba Fett got her whole like middle section replaced.
Yeah. So we know that that's a capability. So that's my best guess is we're going to get, you know, he's going to get some sort of mod. He's going to get patched up and he's going to make it through.
Because if you look at his armor in the Rebels show and his armor in this show, they're similar, but they're not the same.
It was definitely, that thing went through all, it was full Han Solo style.
Yeah.
Just a little lower.
Yeah, right. To the gut. It should be pretty fatal, but, you know, we might in the next episode see Fifth Brother run and be like, what are you doing? And then pick him up and run to the doctor. You know, we've seen other Jedi survive more and die from less. Qui-Gon died from about the same injury. And then canonically, Darth Maul was cut in half and lived through that.
Yeah. So there's plenty of precedent that he's going to make it. Does this mean that Reva is going to be rogue now? I mean, she's gone against her master, so to speak.
That's an interesting question. She could, in the very near term, super near term, if he's unconscious, she could play it like, well, we were in a fight with a Jedi. He used his lightsaber and struck down the Grand Inquisitor. Because it doesn't say if it's a green blade or a red blade. It just says wound. And so they may not know better. That, I mean, if the guy comes through, though, they'll get the full story, I'm pretty sure, once he wakes up. But yeah, it might not be insurmountable right away.
You know, we might have a he said, she said situation that's got to be arbitrated by a certain Dark Lord of the Sith.
Yeah, and that guy might just care about the results, not really about administrative details.
Nice callback there. Yeah, so yeah, I think you're right. That's it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And man, we had Kenobi just kind of cowering. He was trying to get pumped up, ready to go, but he was kind of scared. And so then we got to get to the big moment where, you know, she reveals, I was surprised she knows that Vader is Anakin Skywalker. I was really surprised by how does she know that? I want to know more about, mm-hmm. you know, what that tells me. Maybe they have some sort of, maybe he confides in her. I mean, I didn't think the Inquisitors would know that.
Well, let's get into our questions section. How would she know that? I wasn't prepared for that question. That's a great question. How would she know that? That's why I think she's one of the five Padawans from the opening scene. That's why I think I have that theory that I stated in the last episode where she blames everything on Anakin. And so somehow she was very close to seeing it all. Maybe she survived seeing Anakin strike down that other room of Padawans.
Then why is she trying to serve him so aggressively?
Maybe she just wants to get close. Maybe.
Maybe she's trying to kill him, you think?
Maybe. I mean, maybe the Grand Inquisitor is like the only one of the bunch that gets to talk to him directly at this stage.
Huh.
Because I know at a certain point, Vader takes them over completely, but I don't know if that's happened yet. Do you know?
I think at this point, yes. Yes, he's in charge of them. He doesn't like them. There's definitely animosity there, and they're afraid of him, for sure. But she seems to be very excited about bringing Kenobi before Vader. And that was, I thought that was great delivery when she was like, you didn't know, you know, that he was still alive. And as soon as he hears Vader, the name, you see his eyes, he's just like, what the heck? That was remarkable.
This is the first role I've seen this actress in. So, I mean, now that I've seen her hate so strongly, I don't know if I could see her in like a romantic comedy after this and totally buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She's coming apart at the seams. She's bringing the hate. It's a contrast with the other Inquisitors who are a lot more reserved. And yeah, and she was really taunting Obi-Wan, which is that was an interesting dynamic. Yeah, did that moment hit you pretty hard as well as far as, because I always wonder, I didn't know that if Obi-Wan knew or not. I guess he's been out in the desert, he would have no idea that Vader was still around.
Well, he's totally disconnected from everything. They're in the Outer Rim, so they're marginally affiliated with the central government. You know, stormtroopers can come and do what they do, but mostly because they carry rifles, but not really because the Empire's the law around there in the strictest sense. I could buy that he's not connected to anything news-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, your explanation of him is disconnected from the Force. He's living in the desert under a rock. So he didn't know. There was something I saw out there in the extended universe that maybe as he was leaving on Padme's ship that he saw Palpatine's ship coming in and then maybe assumed that Vader was still alive. I don't know. It's so they retconned that, I think, obviously. But then, you know, we had him make it out of there. He made it out alive. He's on the ship. And what did you think of that moment where he says Anakin, and it's almost like a Kylo Ren, Rey connection moment where they have a connection in the Force, and then we cut over to Vader.
Anakin.
Breathtaking, really. I mean, the intense mixture of fear and bewilderment and awe and surprise and, you know, every other kind of emotion that exists only on the furthest edges of your nerves was playing across his face when he was making that, all those connections. Whatever version of the truth is that might involve everything that we've mentioned here just now was working out in his mind, and none of it really mattered because the fact was there was a Vader and he didn't know.
Yeah, it was a really good performance. And then the way Anakin Vader looked was interesting because he looked pretty gnarly and kind of bloated like we saw in Return of the Jedi with old Anakin. And I was surprised by that because I didn't know, you know, what he might look like being that it's, you know, he's still a little younger, but it wasn't looking so hot.
Yeah, I think that's a Bacta tank. I've read enough Empire-era Star Wars to know that he does not spend all the time that he has to in the suit. He doesn't actually like to be in the helmet. It's just that what he has to do in order to walk around. The chamber that we get to see in Empire is like a positive pressure type environment where he can actually be outside of his helmet and it like forces air into his lungs. That's what I mean by positive pressure. It's like it seeps into the holes, right? Kind of like a CPAP, but without things being up your nose right then.
Yeah, or maybe he can actually sustain himself with the force, but it's probably hard and painful to do.
And only for a while. Short stints. I mean, seconds. I remember. I forget which book it was. It might have even been the novelization of Empire, but it was like a challenge for him to retain that small amount of humanity by not having to exist in the helmet, but he could only do it for moments. But it was a challenge that he made for himself every time he came out of the chamber, was to see how long he could last, but it was only like 10 seconds.
Kind of like Mary Poppins, Princess Leia in The Last Jedi in space.
Kind of like that short do-over time that Jedi are allowed. So the back to Tank, and this part of Vader's history 10 years on from his maiming, maybe they're not technologically there yet where he can have the chamber. Maybe he has to go back into the tank because he's just that bad off before he's back in the suit doing suit stuff, and then that takes its toll, so he's got to go back in the tank after that.
Yeah, but I tell you, that ending scene, that made me really excited for the next episode.
Then let's talk about I have one more question for you. And this will tie into predictions as well as your last comment. Haja, when he sends Obi-Wan and Leia off in the prearranged drop in the cargo ship, he says there will be people waiting for you. They will help you.
Go to these coordinates. They'll help you from there.
And how do I know this isn't just a trap?
What choice do you have?
Say what? What people? Yeah. What do you think?
I think what they're saying is because Obi-Wan, like you said, was so disconnected and just kind of traumatized, he may not know that there's some resistance out there that's starting to form. And so I think we're going to see them connect with some new characters. I don't know casting-wise what we're talking about, but it's looking like that's something that's going to happen.
You know, at Star Wars Celebration, they have released the first trailer for Andor, which comes out later this year. There's footage that looks definitely like Mon Mothma.
Yes, I watched that just one off, and I was blown away. And I guess I saw they're not using that volume like they did for Mando, Boba Fett, and this show, where it's the big LED circle that they can film in, and it looks real. Apparently, they didn't do any of that. This is all real sets on that show, but I thought it looked incredible. Yes. So yeah, when does that come out? Like in the summer?
August.
Okay.
And it's long. The first part is 12 episodes, and then there's a guaranteed second season that leads up to the beginning of Rogue One.
Wow, that's like many, many hours of Star Wars. That's that trailer. I didn't know much about that show, but after seeing that, I'm going, okay, I'm ready.
Well, Mon Mothma she didn't get much play Revenge of the Sith, but there are outtakes that could have been in the movie that showed that she was active. She was part of Bail Organa's and Padme's circle opposing military action, etc., etc. So she would still be active. So if we wind up on Chandrilla, because we don't know where the ship's going, that's where she's from, Chandrilla. So maybe we get some Mon Mothma action, or like you've mentioned, possibly Ahsoka. I mean, who are these people? Is it the universe is big? They have a lot to draw from off of the bench for characters in this era. A lot of them would get me pretty excited. Those are just a couple. What about you? What do you think?
I mean, Yoda could show up for all we know, but I think if they start doing that, it would take away from this. I really think this show, just like that final scene of this episode, it is all about Anakin and Obi-Wan. So I think they're going to keep the focus there, but it's not all going to just be that confrontation. We're still going to have these stories on the side. I'm really interested to see what they do, because there's the Inquisitors, there's plenty of bad guys, but who is the good guys equivalent that we're going to have to match the Inquisitors, if any?
The rebellion might be completely outclassed in terms of force users right now, and there's nothing they can do about it. All right, so let's move into predictions then. We don't exactly know where we're going in terms of the people Haja mentioned and we've just been talking about. What else do you think you might be able to predict at this point going into the third episode dropping next Wednesday instead of inconveniently on a random Friday?
Yeah, like I said, I really hope we get some Vader, if not backstory, like you said, what's going on with him now. I think we're going to see some interaction between him and the Inquisitors. Possibly we're going to get this Qui-Gon. There's an inevitable Qui-Gon tie-in.
Yeah.
We don't know how that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. Yeah, it's going to be at the darkest moment. You know, one thought I had, how cool would it be if it is at the end, and because let's not forget, Anakin had a very strong tie with Qui-Gon, and I think Dave Filoni had said Qui-Gon was kind of the father that Anakin really needed, and then he was taken away from him and set him on a certain path that, you know, Obi-Wan wasn't equipped to handle Anakin, but if Qui-Gon would have been around, he might have been okay. That could be really powerful if Qui-Gon comes in being such an important role to both those characters.
Right, yeah.
And says, okay, stop fighting and shake hands, bro. You know, I don't know.
Stop watching and light that lightsaber, Obi-Wan. Yeah, I like that. We having some Vader action next week. Kenobi coming to terms with the fact that there's a new unexpected player on the field in the form of his former student and having to deal with that, plus this bloodhound, Reva, chasing after him. She will not stay off his trail very long, regardless of what happens with the rest of the Inquisitors. Whether, you know, because she's, until we get to Vader in the front seat, she's kind of our heavy right now. The other Inquisitors will be an inconvenience, but they're not going to kill us narratively. It just can't be. She might, though. I mean, obviously, we know that these two people survive, but still, like, she's the most dangerous.
Yeah, and I think we might see the Organa family step in here more now that they've gone after their daughter. I think, you know, we see them in the rebellion. They're key players. So mm-hmm. maybe this is kind of a catalyst that brings them into the fight a little bit more aggressively. And so I expect we'll see Kenobi link up with them and get some scenes there.
Right. If you've got the Viceroy's daughter, but you just need a little help getting back home, it makes sense to reach out and say, hey, why don't you send the Corellian Corvette and pick us up? Because it's getting kind of hard to manage on our own out here. Well, do you have anything else on either of these first two episodes? Any final thoughts?
Paul, I'm good. I enjoyed it. It's been good talking to you. And man, I'm just excited for this next episode.
No kidding. I mean, it is a lot of TV right now in the podcasting world to try to absorb all at once. But this is something I would prioritize over all of it so far. I have not watched a stitch of Stranger Things yet. It's only been Kenobi all the time for me. Anyway, if people wanted to find you, Mark, on social media, where would they look?
At JiggyNut on Twitter. 2 G's, 2 T's.
All right. And if people wanted to find me, they would look at Paul V. Daily on Twitter or at Pod Clubhouse on Twitter or our website, podclubhouse.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, but not so much on Instagram. I would look on Facebook for us. If you like this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to it so that other people can find it on iTunes or whatever platform you use. Although please use iTunes. That's the big one, and that's the one everyone cares about. So please rate, review, and subscribe to that one, and then use whatever you want to use after that. So thanks a lot, Mark. We'll check in again next week for part 3 of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.